Welcome back to another episode of the Ready Your Future podcast, where you are equipped with the essential tools and knowledge to ensure you and your loved ones thrive through any crisis. Join me as we navigate the world of preparedness so you can safeguard your future and be your family's survival guide. Hey, I'm Todd Sepulveda, a regular guy living in the suburbs trying to spread the word about getting prepared for the future. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another episode. Before we jump into this episode, I want to give a shout out to Gary, who bought me 10 coffees over at Buy Me a Coffee. Gary, I greatly appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for being such a great supporter of the podcast. So everyone, we know that the world is crazy, and I know it's been a little while since I've done a podcast episode, and part of that craziness was being out of power for 7 days when the recent derecho hit the Houston area. And so I want to talk a little bit about this and just some lessons learned as we were kind of going through it, and just some observations as I experienced it, right? So one of the great things about real life situations, you really don't want to go through like an emergency preparedness kind of type of situation. And really, this wasn't one of those life or death ones. It wasn't a really bad one. It could have been. It wasn't for us because, of course, we were prepared. But I was able to test preps. And again, we're talking about a 7-day power outage in Houston when we're getting into the summer months when the feel like temperature is 104 degrees. All right, so pretty significant thing. So this happened about 2 weeks ago. We're already about a week out of it, but it was interesting. And like I said, some observations that I want to share with you. So this derecho that hit was a derecho was a storm. I'll talk a little bit about that here in a minute. But it was about a 30-minute storm that came through our area, or at least where we experienced it was 30 minutes. This one actually started in Austin, Texas, and went all the way to Florida. Now, at one point, it did go into the Gulf, but then it wound up, hitting the panhandle of Florida. And so we're talking about like a 1,050-mile area where, it just kind of left destruction. And so it was, it was one of those things that you kind of look back at and like, okay, there are some things here. We don't always talk about derechos, right? And so one of those things. So a derecho is a very long-lived and damaging thunderstorm. As a storm is classified as a derecho if the wind damage swath extends more than 240 miles and has wind gusts of at least 58 miles or greater along most of the length of the storm's path. So anyway, so that is kind of like a definition from weather.gov. This one, like I said, was 1,050 miles, and there was information that the wind gust were up to 120 miles, downtown Houston, where you have a lot of high rises and, you have big buildings, and man, there was a lot of destruction there, more than you normally see from, from like hurricanes that we see, or at least the destruction that we get to see downtown. So it was pretty crazy here. So you might be saying, okay, derechos, we really don't have them very often. And the last one, so I went to Wikipedia, I was kind of looking up, I think there's like 80 something that have been at least documented, I think from the first one, at least here in the United States, July 31st, 1877. And of course, the last one being the one that kind of went through starting in Austin all the way to Florida. And, it says May 19th through the 24th. Ours hit on May 16th. That was that Thursday around 6 o'clock in the afternoon. But the last one before that was in April 2nd, 2024. And let me see, an MCS in the morning to noon hours caused damage from Missouri-Illinois border to West Virginia, the West Virginia-Virginia state line. At least 17 tornadoes were confirmed to have touched down during a national radar outage. Let me see. And then before that one, June 29th, 2023, so a powerful derecho affected parts of Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana, also leaving over 300,000 people without power, Winds of over 100 miles per hour were estimated in extreme southeastern Iowa and western Illinois, with multiple reports of damaged roof, destroyed outbuildings, and large trees blown over. I think when I was reading a little bit more about this one, and not specifically here on Wikipedia, this one is more in a rural setting. So, I mean, of course, it did affect people, and there was a damaging winds and 300,000 people without power. At one point in the Houston area alone, there was over 1 million people without power. And, that was, we were one of those that we were like one of the last 100,000 people without power, to finally get their power on after 7 days. But anyway, so this derecho struck Houston. It resulted in about 8 deaths. And again, like I said, over 1 million people without power. And again, I know I've already said this, but in the Houston area downtown, they clocked wind gusts of over 120 miles per hour. And so, I'm very familiar. I talk about hurricanes a lot. We're very familiar with hurricanes. And the thing about hurricanes is we know if they come into the Gulf and we start to get prepared for it and all that kind of stuff, or at least, people start, running to the stores and junk, it's going to hit the Galveston area. And then we are about, 70 miles from Galveston, right? And so it's going to, the wind gusts are going to hit, even if it hits at a category 5, by the time it winds up getting to us, it's at a category 1, and it's coming from one location, and there's not a lot of tornadic activity. I mean, there's some, I don't want to say there's not, but I just don't remember it being a whole lot. In this one, the thing about this storm is that it's like a consistent wind going through. It's not dissipating. It's not slowing down. You're going to feel those 100 mile per hour or, whatever it is, to be a derecho, like I said, it's 58 miles per hour and up wind gusts. You're going to feel that for a long time. And it really got crazy here when we were here. So again, it happened really, really fast. Around 6 p.m. on Thursday, I was already home. And I was, sitting down. I think I was drinking something and, watching television. The news comes on around 6. And, of course, they preempted everything else. And the weather guy was on there and he was talking about this fast moving storm. And they were tracking it. They're like, okay, now it's here and now it's going to get here. And so we were tracking it as it was happening and looking outside. It went from day to really, really dark. And it was crazy. So one of my coaches called me and was talking to me about something at work, and I kind of figured she was in her car. I'm like, are you at home? And she goes, no, I'm out running errands. I'm like, you need to get home right away. There's a big, powerful storm coming. She goes, I will. I just need to make a stop at the grocery store. And I said, no, you need to go home. I mean, this is no playing around. This is not just like a little thunderstorm. This is serious. And so she said, okay, I will. But she didn't listen. She just told me that to shut me up and get me off the phone. And she went to the grocery store and she regretted it. I mean, she wound up, was right in the middle of the storm, had to pull into a building, next to a building, because the wind was so powerful. I know other people were kind of caught off guard and they were on the road. And I mean, cars were kind of getting pushed around and everything, because you can imagine 100 miles an hour and cars, on the freeway and stuff. And then you couldn't even see. It was so, so dark. And with the wind kind of blowing sideways, it was really hard to see. So she was really scared. She said she was really scared. She goes, I'm never going to not listen to you again, Todd. Next time I'm going to go, home right away. But it went from day to night really, really quickly, right? And then there was tornado warnings. And that's one of the great things about having a weather app. Even if you hate all the stupid notifications every so often, they let you know. And that was one of my things, because people got caught in this all over the place. And I'm like, did y'all not have weather apps where you get a notification where, it's like, hey, go get into cover, or, go into your, to your inner rooms or whatever it might be. Now, I say all that about the tornado warnings, and I didn't go in myself. We were outside looking at the at the backyard, and the wind was blowing so crazy. I'm so glad that we have a fairly new fence, because, you know, fences got blown down all over the neighborhood. It was so crazy. But I have a plum tree, and wouldn't you know it, this year out of every other year, I mean, this is like a bumper crop, and we have plums growing out the wazoo, trying to keep the squirrels away from it. There was probably about 100 plums on the ground afterwards. I got a picture of it, and you know, I'll put it up on the website and link to it in the description and in the show notes. You can go check it out along with some other pictures and stuff. But it was nuts, man. It was nuts how many stupid plums were there. Now, even with that, and all the plums that we threw away from, you know, being green and on the ground, we still have tons and tons of plums. So that's a great thing. But anyway, it was pretty crazy. But as quickly as it happened, I mean, it was gone, right? In like a 30-minute storm, but it was just pushing through, going east, going towards going towards downtown, going towards finally Florida, like I mentioned. So, of course, the power goes out, you know, and we're sitting around. And normally, CenterPoint Energy, which is the company that deals with the line. So, we have a different electric company that we pay, but CenterPoint manages the lines, the gas lines, the power lines, and all that kind of stuff. They're pretty good about getting people up. But normally, the power outages are a little bit more fixed, right? They had like it said in Wikipedia, I'm going to use that term, a swath of damage all throughout the Houston area. And like I said, 1 million people were without power. And so you can just understand that their website was just overwhelmed with people trying to figure out, okay, when am I going to get power back? So luckily that Thursday wasn't very hot. But my wife doesn't like to be uncomfortable, so she was like, maybe you should get the generator out. One of the cool things is that it was daylight, and I have already, I already have everything for this generator. Like, we've run it before. I've run it with the plumbers who inserted the gas line for me, because I use the natural gas to run this. It's a tri-fuel generator. And then I ran it again with the electrician when he put the transfer switch in there. So I had a little bit of experience doing it and putting it together. But and that was just recently, probably in February when we the last time I tested it all out. And then, you know, so I got it out. I'm like, okay, maybe so. So we went ahead and got it out. So I have a Duramax 13,000 XP. I think it's like an HXT. It's a tri-fuel. I've talked about it before. It will do fuel, it will do propane, and it will do natural gas. And I got to tell you that I'm just very glad that I had it, you know, because the longest we've ever gone without power here has been 3 days. I think that was Hurricane Ike. But you know, 7 days, I mean, this is one for the books, right? And so I'm so, so glad that we had it. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. So anyway, so we got that out, got it going, got it running. This was the first time where I was actually going to turn the power off at the circuit breaker and engage the transfer switch and all that stuff to be able to run the lights in, and everything ran well, you know, everything ran like it was supposed to. So after we got the Duramax, it is whenever you run, so it would run, if I was running gasoline, it would run my whole house, including the AC. But I didn't want to run fuel. You know, I didn't want to keep that much fuel around. So I wanted to run natural gas because that's just easier and you don't have to fool around with the gas. You don't have to keep all the gas and keep running to the gasoline or to the stations, right? To the gas stations. I'll talk a little bit about that here in just a minute. Anyway, so when it runs on natural gas, it runs a lot. It doesn't have as much horsepower, right? Or power, you know, kilowatts to push out. Horsepower, kilowatts to push out. So my electrician told me, like, Todd, it'll probably run your AC, but the way that it starts up, you might run the risk of damaging your compressor. So I really wouldn't do it. You know, you talked about doing a portable AC, and that's really what I would do. That's what I do at my home. And so that's what I would suggest you do. You don't want to ruin a $10,000, you know, AC or whatever, or have to, you know, replace it just because, you know, you wanted to not get a window unit or whatever. And so, you know, took that advice. I mean, that's advice that I've always given. So we went ahead and, you know, turned all that on, ready to go, and had power, and everybody was happy. We even had internet. We had internet for about an extra day and a half until it finally crapped out on us. And the reason being is that there's a battery backup at the panel in the neighborhood. And I found this out a little bit later on. And so it will push internet. So if you have power, you will have the internet. But as soon as that battery bank ran out, you know, the internet crapped out on us. And so, I mean, everybody was happy. We had internet. We were good to go. But, you know, when that ran out, I was like, oh, man, that sucks. But we still had our phones. We still had, you know, all that kind of self-service and all that. That really worked out. Anyway, so connected it. You know, we're running well. We got all that stuff going on. I got the AC out, and I had not tried that one out yet. I just recently got it, probably about a month before. And because I was, you know, I talked about hurricane season. And so I got my portable AC unit before that. It's a Madea portable AC. I think it will cover 450 square feet. So it's not a window unit. When I first started talking about, you know, which one I was going to get, people were like, hey, get a window unit. They're better. And I agree. I think window units do run better. However, the windows that I have would not, I guess they're not big enough to where I would be able to run a big enough window unit to cool off the area that I wanted to cool off. And so it would have had to be a really small window unit, and it really wouldn't have worked. So, it just wouldn't have been sufficient. So I went ahead and got this portable AC unit. It's on wheels. It has this, retractable vent and exhaust. And so you connect it to, you know, to your window, and it has one of those, you know, things, you know, an adapter that you can adapt it to whatever you need to do, and put it out there and cranked it on and got it going. And, It was working great. So the first two nights, you know, a storm like that, one of the things the weather people kept saying is like it disturbs the atmosphere. And so it doesn't continue to rain and all that kind of stuff. But the temperature was in the 70s. And so with the AC in the living room, it was really cooling off the whole, you know, we shut off all the other doors. But it cooled off the living room, the dining room, and the kitchen, and it was fairly decent. I mean, we slept really, really well. In fact, that second night, we had to have blankets because it was pretty chilly in there. We had the ceiling fan going, and we had another oscillating fan going. And so it was really great. But on Saturday, and watching the news, it was like, okay, Saturday morning, and paying attention to the weather, it was going to get up to the 90s, and the feel-like temperature was going to be up into the hundreds, and then the rest of the week was like that. So I'm like, you know what? We probably need to go ahead and seal off, you know, the dining room and the kitchen and everything, and just cool off the living room. And so I did do that, and like I said, I have pictures if you want to see that, where I have 4 mil. Again, I was already preparing for hurricane season. I had 4 mil plastic, a big roll that I got at Home Depot, and we rolled it out, we measured it, cut it up, and put it up with painter's tape. And so I had some tacks that I was going to use, but my wife recently just painted, and she was like, I really don't want you to do that if you don't have to. So we had a lot of painter's tape left over from the paint, you know, the paint job that she was doing. And so we just started using that, and you know, we reinforced it, and it worked. It worked really, really well. And so it kept the, it kept the living room cool. Now, when it would get to the hot part of the day, it would start to, it was not uncomfortable. It was comfortable, but the house would get like to 75, 76. And, you know, for many of you, it's like, man, that is perfect, you know, a perfect temperature. For others, it's like, that's not, you know. And so that was one of the things. So like somewhere between 3 to 7 p.m., it was around 75, 76, and then it would start cooling down. And again, in the evening time, we would, you know, a blanket would, you know, we would wind up using a blanket because it would, you know, be, you know, really chilly. And so we just, you know, kind of kept that going, and we stayed in the living room for those 6 evenings. And so I was off of work because there were so many people that were without power. The school system, you know, was shut down. And so we were off that Friday, Monday, Tuesday. And then I guess, you know, we went back that Wednesday. And I really hated it. I was grateful that my father-in-law lives with us and he was here at the house, because I didn't want to leave the generator on by itself. But it was, you know, he was here. And so left that on. And, you know, that, you know, kept us going till Thursday morning. And Thursday morning is when it really, truly, the power finally came on. But one of the things that really, and you kind of understand it, is that people were getting frustrated really, really early on. And so when CenterPoint, which again, they handled the lines, they weren't communicating. I mean, the outage map wasn't working like it was, like it normally does. And people were just very frustrated that there wasn't a lot of communication. People were frustrated that they were hot, you know? So like the first 2 days, people were okay. But then you get to the next couple of days, and people were starting to get very frustrated. So on Twitter, I was reading some of the, like, they're posting. So, you know, they do this, like, in Houston, crews set off this morning before. This was the 18th, right? So this is Saturday morning that they posted this at 9:02 a.m. In Houston, crews set off this morning before the sun had come up, relieving teams who worked through the night. Damage assessment continues so repair work can be completed safely until the last customer is restored. They kept saying that, right? Until the last customer is restored. So when you go down into reading some of these responses and replies, here are some, right? So updates when power will be restored would be nice. Somebody else, at this rate, it will cost more in gasoline for my generator than my average monthly electric bill. And I heard that from different people, you know, because they're having to run their generator so much. Here's another one. Your outage map has been down since 24 hours ago. Why are you not posting ETAs per zip code? And then the other person is like, wow. And they did a screenshot of site maintenance of their outage map. We need a major program to bury power lines throughout town where feasible. We are taking too much risk with these overhead power lines. I'm in 77007 and got power back at 7 a.m. this morning. And so everybody's like, oh, yeah, okay, right. So everybody else starts posting their zip codes. Like, what about this zip code? What about this zip code? Anyway, so people were really, really nasty, right, about the things that they were saying. People were coming in from all over, you know, different states coming in to help and coming to, I mean, we even had people from Florida coming in to help, although Florida had its own problems, and people were coming in to help get the power lines going. And I think Georgia and Arizona and other places. And so very grateful for, you know, people that were coming, but it's just like, there was so much work. The big, one of the crazy scenes, and I'm going to link to a video. Hopefully I still have it. I still have it linked where you can go and check it out. These big transmission towers, they were crumpled. Like if they were like made out of toothpicks and someone just grabbed it, and they were that mangled. And so that's how powerful the storm was. That's how powerful the winds were. I mean, at one point there were electrical lines over the freeway, and so they had to shut down the freeway because there was electrical lines, you know, there. And so it was just pretty chaotic. So people don't realize the extent of the damage. And so people, again, after 2 days, started getting frustrated. And by third, fourth, and fifth day, people were really, really frustrated. I know in my own Facebook, my neighborhood Facebook group, I mean, people were very, very frustrated. And, you know, to be able to not have their power, you know, people were losing their food, losing, you know, their refrigerators, they were uncomfortable, it was hot, all that stuff was going on. You know, the city is like, hey, there's cooling centers, you can come and you can come hang out or whatever. But You know, we have all the stuff, debris. I mean, people were like going out having to cut down trees and clean up their yards and stuff, and then come into a hot house, not being able to cool off. And so people were very frustrated. Lights were out. And so people just, you know, there was a lot of times where you would get to a light and people were, everyone would take their turn to go through it. And it was working like clockwork. And then you get this one idiot who would just get there and like would just blast through it, right? And that happened multiple times where people would just run through lights and just either they weren't paying attention or they weren't wanting to be courteous and kind, and they were just frustrated and they were ready to go, right? And so, people are just, again, not having it. And you can just believe that any kind of emergency where people are frustrated, you're going to have those people that are, you know, keep it cool under pressure and they can deal with it. And you're going to have those people that are just very frustrated that they hear, one of the comments I remember from the Facebook group is like, it wasn't my neighborhood Facebook group. It was another Facebook group, but it was like, it's very frustrating hearing somebody else with power and knowing that you don't have power. And they were like, I know it's not their fault, but it's very frustrating. You know, it was like, yeah, it's very frustrating that other people prepared and you didn't prepare, and you could have easily prepared to wind up doing that. One of the guys, I loved it. One of the guys on the Facebook page is like, guys, you know, this happens every single year. Something happens. Hurricanes, whatever. You've got to be prepared for this, you know? And so I love that guy put it out there. It's like, you can be prepared for very little. You know, you don't have to have the natural gas and the transfer switch and all that kind of stuff. But having, you know, a generator where you can at least save your freezers and your refrigerator. You know, just your refrigerator, if you're talking about condiments and stuff like that, especially with prices nowadays, you could be easily talking about a couple of $100 worth of food just in your refrigerator. But then you start adding your freezer, and I've got a refrigerator in the garage with a freezer. I've got another freezer in the garage. I got a refrigerator in the home. And so I've got a lot of food there, and, you know, a lot of money invested in food and frozen food that I don't want to, you know, to waste. And so for me, it was smart to be able to invest in a big generator that could power my whole house and, you know, provide that comfort as well on top of all that. Now, I'm very appreciative of the fact that the natural gas was, that I wound up doing that, because that next day, so I was, you know, talking to my dad and his generator wasn't starting up. He doesn't do the maintenance on his like he should, but it wasn't starting up. And so I was going to go over there and help him out. And I asked him how much gas he had. He said he didn't have a whole lot. And so, you know, he's dealing with my mom, and my mom's got some health issues. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get a couple of my empty gas tanks, because I've got some big 5-gallon gas tanks, because I'm prepared for that. I just don't have the gas inside of them, and because I just don't want to fool with the rotation of it. You know, I just don't want to deal with that. So I grabbed a couple of those, and my son and I, we go, and we're like, we're gonna stop and find some gas. Here's the problem: with the power out in the whole area, there was only one gas station that had power. And so we get in line and we're sitting there for 30 minutes and it doesn't even move. The other thing is, because there's no internet, people aren't able to pay. And so that was a big, you know, we sat there and we watched this one guy fill gas tank after gas tank after gas tank. And he's filling up all these little, you know, little gas tank, you know, like 1 gallon, 2 gallons, all these, you know, types of things that he's doing. And he must have just, you know, tried to pick up as many as he could from family and stuff like that. But that line was not moving at all. And I finally called dad. I'm like, look, I said, we've got the AC going in our house. I'm going to pick you and mom up. Y'all just come stay with us. And so they, you know, they packed a couple of things and wound up staying with us, or at least, you know, they came over to the house to stay with us for a little while. But that's one of the issues with running fuel, with running gasoline, is if you're in a situation where you don't have gas, you're going to have issues, right? Or you're having to fill it up every so often. Now, my only experience with running a generator on gas for a long time is being up at the country. And so dad would run his on gas, and I think it was a big 5-gallon tank, if I remember correctly, and it would run through the night because we had a little window unit that we would cool the trailer off. And so it was, it would run throughout the night. And so somewhere in the morning, it was always like around 5-6 o'clock, you'd hear the generator start sputtering and it would just, you know, run out of gas. And so if you were doing that, like I would have had to that would have been, if it was something similar, like 15 gallons a day if you're running nonstop. You know, I don't know if I would have run nonstop if that was the case, but that, you know, that would have been the case. So I'm going out running and trying to find gas every single day. Now, in my situation, if I really needed gas, I would have just traveled up north because, you know, up north, they weren't affected. I've got a coworker who, I mean, he travels in, he comes in to work, but probably about 45 minutes into work, they weren't affected at all up there. So I could have traveled a 45 minutes, you know, to go get gas up there and we would have been fine, but I would have had to do that every single day. By being connected to the natural gas, that wasn't even an issue, right? The only thing I needed to do was I needed to change, you know, do the maintenance on the generator. And I became a pro at doing maintenance. And so I got that down. Actually, one of the pictures that I'll share is from, you know, I was actually draining the oil and putting oil back in there. And so, you know, that worked out really well. And I highly recommend that if you have a generator, you know, start it up every so often and you want to, you know, change the oil out like you need to. And it's definitely worth it. You want to have that generator in good working order when you are, you know, when you need it. So I've mentioned the Facebook page. A lot of people were on the Facebook page and, or the neighborhood one, and there's a lot of information being shared, and most of the time it's accurate, but this time it wasn't. Like, people would get on the website and then they hear something, or they, you know, somebody told them something, and just, it wasn't always accurate. People started going out and finding like the people that were working in the neighborhood, and we didn't get people working in the neighborhood till like the third or fourth day, but they would go and they would find them and they're like, "Hey, you know, can you give us an update?" And they were very vague a lot of the times. And, you know, they would say, "Oh, you know, you're going to be up, you know, by this time." And sometimes in the neighborhood, people were up by that time, but not the whole neighborhood. And so if you're sitting there and you don't have power and you hear, you know, you'll have it by 8 o'clock tonight. And then people do get it by 8 o'clock tonight, but you don't wind up getting it because you're not, you know, in that leg of the circuit or whatever, or that part of the grid. You know, it's very frustrating. Again, people, like I said, were very, very frustrated. So I wake up that Thursday morning when the power comes on. So it would have been 7 days. It wouldn't have been a full 7 days because power went out about six. I mean, it would have been 12 hours short of a full 24 hours. But I let the dogs out around 5:10 and let them out. And I went to go check the smart meter because people were getting power in the neighborhood, but we weren't getting it. And so I'm checking the stupid smart meter to see if it's going, and it's not going. And so I'm like, all right. So I know that I was going to have to change. This was going to be the day that I needed to change out the oil. And so the dogs came in. I was waiting for daylight because I didn't want to change the oil and you know, when it was dark. So I was waiting for daylight to come up and, you know, just so I could see a little bit easier. And I wanted to do it in the morning when everything was cool. I didn't want it to, you know, do it in the middle of the day where it was warm and everything, but I was already going to work. And so it was going to work that previous day. So anyway, go out there at around 6:10 in the morning. I'm getting ready. I'm looking at the generator. I'm getting ready to turn it off so that I can start changing the oil. And I glance over at the smart meter and it's on. And I'm like, I come inside. I'm like, "Hey, I think it's on, guys." And so I go ahead and, you know, turn off the generator, disconnect it, the whole deal, flip the circuit breaker, and sure enough, everything comes back on. So we turned on the AC, turned it down so it could cool the rest of the house, took down the plastic, but I left the little portable AC going to help continue cooling the house down. So went ahead and took a shower and got ready and went to work, you know. And so we were good to go. So it was about 12 hours short of a full 7 days without power. So just a few takeaways that I want to share with you guys in this one here. Know how to use your gear and your generator. So the time that you know, you have some kind of a situation like this, isn't the time to try to figure it out, you know, get it out of the box and all that kind of stuff. And so I was really glad that I had set up the generator. When you're dealing with natural gas and all of that, it's one of those things that's kind of like, okay, I don't want to screw something up. I don't want to blow myself up, all that kind of stuff. And so I was really glad that I had already had the experience of all of that and to run it. And so, you know, it's not a big expense. One of my coaches, because they're further out, more in a more rural setting than I am, and they, you know, when their power goes out, they usually lose it for a couple of days. So they looked into getting a Generac, a whole house, you know, generator. When they priced it, it was $25,000. And they're like, there's no way. And there's no way to do that when you don't experience that on a regular basis. I mean, we haven't lost power since Winter Storm Uri here, right? I mean, we might have lost it for like an hour or two, but not any time significant. And so if I would have invested in a, you know, whole home generator like that, yeah, it would have powered my AC and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I wouldn't have had to get out the, you know, the natural gas hose and the hose that go, you know, the electrical cord that goes from the generator to the transfer switch. I wouldn't have had to do all that kind of stuff. But my whole system was less than $2,000. So that Duramax 13,000, I think it was around, I got it on sale, it was like $900 or something like that. Then a couple of $100 to put the gas line, and it's a quick connect, and I got a quick connect on the generator, and then the hose was, you know, the electrical, you know, to run from the generator to the transfer switch. I mean, that was a couple of $100, and I got a long one because I wanted to make sure that, you know, it's not, I wanted to have enough room, right? I got a 25 footer for the natural gas line. I wish I would have got a little bit longer, but it works out. I'm able to put it underneath my awning. So if it's raining, I can still run it without any issues, right? Or under, not my awning, but under the my back porch. And so that worked out really well. I just wish it would have got a little bit longer. Maybe like a 30 foot would have been perfect. But the 25 footer worked well. All that stuff, you know. And so getting the transfer switch put in, my electrician, the guy that I use for all the other stuff, and I've known him for a little while. I mean, he was very reasonable. And so, like I said, all for under $2,000. And it was a way to go. But test out your stuff. If I would have waited to try to test it out, figure all that stuff out, I would have lost daylight and I would have been doing it in the dark. And it would have been very frustrating, right, to be able to try to figure all that out. Figure out what you want to do with the fuel, because there are, you know, I think a dual fuel or having a tri-fuel works out really, really well. If you're one of those situations where all I have is a gas one, okay, fine. Just know that, you know, you might want to get some gas cans. And if you don't want to get into that rotation thing, because that's something I just never wanted to do. I was going to do it. I have enough that I can rotate it like every 2 months. I have, you know, 6 5-gallon, you know, gas cans that I could use. I just never really got into wanting to do that. And so that's why I really focus on the tri-fuel. I'm really glad I did, because running to the store gas station every so often, or trying to find one that was open is not something that I really wanted to do. But you can also run it on propane. Now, the big generator that I have will not run the 20-pound propane tanks. When I talked with Duramax and I emailed back and forth, that you need at least a 40-pound can to be able to run that, because a 20-pound can would get the fuel is getting. I mean, I think they said it would run it for maybe like 5-6 hours, depending on what you're doing, but it would freeze up because it's getting out. It's leaving the fuel. The propane is leaving the canister so fast, and so you really need something bigger than that. So again, I really like the natural gas. It worked out for me, but know what you're going to do about the fuel. Have a plan to run more than just a couple of hours, even if that means investing in gas cans. You really want to get to the point where you're saving your freezer and your refrigerator. Again, I think, you know, if you don't keep a lot of stuff at home like that in your freezer, or you don't have an extra freezer and, you know, you don't keep a lot of stuff in your freezer and refrigerator, all right, no problem to you. But a lot of people, people were like, you know, they were cooking stuff, you know, on their grills, you know, so they wouldn't wind up losing it and sharing it, and, you know, with people like, hey, come over to the house, you know, help me eat my, you know, whatever that I have, my hamburgers that I had in the freezer or whatever. But so much was left out, right? It was kind of weird because the power went out or kind of flickered, because we've had some really crazy weather here recently, and flickered again. And someone posted, I immediately went to the Facebook group to see if power was out, because I was at work. And they were like, oh my gosh, I can't lose. I just replaced all the food in my freezer, in my refrigerator. We can't lose power again, right? And so, you know, it gets expensive, especially with prices nowadays. So it's definitely, even if you're going to get a small generator, get a small generator that will power your freezer and your refrigerator so that you can save that. So you don't wind up losing that. Find a way to get as much info as you can. I have radios, but our cell phones were working. I have plenty of ways to power my cell phones, even if the generator wasn't there. Have the Jackeries and the EcoFlow, and even other little battery banks and power banks and stuff like that would power our cell phones. But anyway, you want to get as much information as you can so you know where to go. If you have a Facebook page, the Nextdoor app, the weather app, again, in my area, CenterPoint Energy, maybe going to, if you go to social media, Twitter or whatever, you can follow specific pages and different social media accounts that would give you like the Houston Police Department, right? The Houston Fire Department, CenterPoint Energy. You can follow those people, the radio or the television stations, because they're providing information on a regular basis. And you can find those on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it now. And you can also follow on, Facebook and follow those accounts so that you can easily get information when you need it. And then again, understand that things can get old very, very fast. Even I think we were at day five, day six, and my wife was like, she's like, man, this is getting old. And I'm like, it is getting old, but we have AC and we have power. She goes, yes, I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for that. It's just old, because your whole daily life is disrupted. Everything is disrupted, right? And how everything is going. And so very grateful that we have that, but imagine what it would be like if you didn't have that. And there were people that were, they didn't necessarily have friends or whatever in other parts of Houston where they could go to, or they didn't want to leave their homes, and which I can kind of understand that, because I did that during Hurricane Ike. When we lost power, my family went to go stay somewhere else, and I stayed here at the house. I'm very glad that I did, because if not, we would have had, water coming in the backyard. And anyway, long story, but anyway, so I can kind of understand that, where you don't want to leave your home, but it just gets really, really old. People get frustrated, people that are out there and, traveling around, and just people are, you can easily lose it. So that's, on top of everything, people can get frustrated, and you might be dealing with someone who's a whack job, right? Who just can't handle their emotions, and they just go off on people. And then another thing is, think about what would happen if this wasn't just a regional event. So like I said, people were able to come and help out from other parts of the country, which we are very grateful for. And I'm sure CenterPoint goes and helps out when that is the case as well. I know they were saying people were from Louisiana were in our neighborhood helping out, right? So people that went to go talk to, the supervisor, and then they would, get on the Facebook page and they would share out information or whatever. The people that were here were from Louisiana working in the neighborhood. And so we're very grateful for that. But what if it wasn't just a regional event? What if it was something worse, something bigger that, caused a lot of trouble, and, people weren't able to come from other places and you were having to deal with that? So 7 days, people were on edge. Actually, people were on edge like on the third, fourth day already. Imagine, if it was an event that was even longer than that, and not like a whole zombie apocalypse thing, but just an event that was a lot bigger than that. And so, this was a storm that was pretty crazy. It happened really fast. One other thing I would suggest is you have a weather app, something on your phone that would give you a notification that things are happening, and check the weather, so often, right? Maybe in the morning time when you wake up, maybe in the evening time, you don't know what the weather is like. So many people are unprepared for, hey, it's going to thunderstorm later on. And, you know, sometimes I get very frustrated with the weather apps because they're not always accurate. The one from weather.com is not accurate. I'm using WeatherBug right now. That seems to be a little bit more accurate, but it's more accurate on the when you look at the hour by hour versus like the 10-day forecast. And so I don't know why that's the case, but it's just like they update the hour by hour faster than the 10-day. And then it has radar on there, so you're able to look at the radar, and that's very beneficial. But I would definitely recommend having some kind of weather app so that you can go out there and you know, check it from time to time. It just makes sense. It's just one of those apps that you just really, really need to have. So, guys, that's my experience, you know, being out with power 7 days. We were tired from sleeping in the living room. The first night, I think we slept in the recliners and whatever. And then my son had brought out his mattress. He was actually cleaning his room when everything went down, and so his mattress was already out. So he let us sleep on his mattress, and he slept, you know, on he slept in the chair. And you know, we actually had a blow up mattress. Actually, a couple of days into it, they went to go stay with my other son, who did have power. And so they, you know, they had a big old, you know, fun fest over there playing video games and everything because they had power and everything over there. And so, you know, it was nice and quiet for us, which was, that was nice. But anyway, you know, it was one of those things. You know, I was glad to kind of go to work on Wednesday, where just a little bit of normalcy was, although we didn't have power at the house, it was a little bit of normalcy. And then, you know, coming back home and dealing with, you know, not having power still or whatever, and then finally getting power that next day. So I don't think our grid is, I don't think things are going to get better anytime soon. I think we have our failing grid. Our infrastructure is not strong. We could have been, you know, with all the money that we're sending all over the place, we could be putting money into our infrastructure, and that's not the case. And then you got these freak storms that just cause a lot of damage, you know, all the way, you know, like again, from Austin all the way to Florida. And so you have these kind of things happening. It's one of those reasons to be better prepared. It's one of those things to really think about and put a little bit of money into it. Maybe you don't go on a big trip this summer, and he's like, okay, I'm going to invest in some things to be better prepared, right? And so you're able to go from there. All right, guys, so I'm going to try to have a link to my website with some pictures and some other things that you might be interested in. If you're interested in the generator that I have, you want to go take a look at it. And even some of the hoses and stuff that I bought, got that. I just got it off of Amazon, and it just kind of really worked out and everything there. So if you want to go check it out and see all the stupid plums that fell off the tree, you can see all of those. I'll have that for you, so you can go check that out. Well, everyone, that's another Ready Your Future episode for you. Hey, if you want to hang out with a community of very knowledgeable preppers, safe from the algorithms of social media, come check out the Ready Your Future exclusive email group. This is an email group where you can ask questions, participate in discussions, and attend our virtual online meetups that happen twice a month. It is super affordable and well worth it. There's a link in the show notes, or visit readyyourfuture.com. And with that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government, grid, or the grind. Until next time, live with no regrets and stay prepped and aware. Peace.